So we are recording now, and again, my name is Rose Morgan, and I work with the Global Village Program and also with the Thrive and Build Worldwide Program, and we're very excited to have you join us this evening for the second in our series of conference calls around the topic of fundraising. Last week, we discussed getting started with your fundraising plan, and we also spent some time talking about the Share.Habitat resource, the new online fundraising resource. We did go a little bit longer than we had planned to, and so this week we're really going to try to hold to an hour-long session. So we're very grateful for having you here. I was going to give just sort of a brief recap of last week's session, and then give you a sense of kind of what's to come as well. So last week, the focus was on getting started and creating a fundraising plan. And so we talked some about the importance of setting a goal, so setting a fundraising goal. And in some cases, folks are doing that in conjunction with house costs or looking at their overall trip cost, plus trying to raise additional funds to support more home building. So we talked about the importance of setting a goal early on and then creating some timelines for you throughout your fundraising process. And then we did have some folks share about different kinds of events they've done as well as different appeal letters. And we went into some detail about Share.Habitat and the new online fundraising resource. As team leaders, you'll be receiving more information about Share.Habitat in the weeks to come, but the site has been launched, and we are inviting teams to use it as well as volunteers. So we'll be keeping you updated both in our team leader notes as well as through your engagement specialist. So that was the call last week was really meant to be kind of an overview and an introduction. And then we did have Sandra Powell from the Share.Habitat team share a little bit with us about what the online fundraising resource can do, which is it's a greatly improved resource from our existing fundraising platform in that it does connect to social networks. It does allow you to post photos and blog, and you know we'll continue to share more information about that resource. Last week we indicated that we did record the call, and we will be posting the recording to the participant resources page. We'll be posting all the recordings of these calls so that if you wanted to invite your team members to access the recordings, they can do that. We're just in the process of getting the first recording edited since we had some comments on the front end and the back end that were part of the call that we want to edit out, but that should be posted next week. We also are in the process of updating our fundraising handbook, and we should have that posted within the next 2 weeks. And so that's actually part of the guide for this call series. So some of what we'll be sharing this evening is, you know, clearly outlined in the fundraising resource. We do have a fundraising guide currently posted that's very helpful, and many of the topics that we'll even discuss tonight are highlighted in that. So that's also a good resource. But we will have an updated fundraising guide posted very soon. So tonight, actually, the focus of this call, and I think we described it as the fear buster call, and how we can try to, make people feel a little more comfortable about asking for support and also looking at the ways that we ask and assess sort of our own personal networks and how we go about fundraising. So I wanted to kind of go over the overall objectives for the call and then just share some ideas with you that we've developed and worked in partnership with the Engage Network, our fundraising support folks, and have highlighted some in the fundraising guide. But really the objectives for this evening are to really focus on assessing sort of your network, so the people in your life, from your acquaintances to coworkers to family and close friends, and to making a list of what you would want to ask and how much you would want to ask of those individuals or colleagues to support you in your work. And then the other focus that we'll have is actually looking at the best ways to ask people. And then just to talk a little bit about kind of overcoming the fear of asking, and we'll definitely be asking some of you to share a little bit about your fundraising experience and how you've possibly overcome that fear of asking. So the first part that I wanted to focus on a little bit is just assessing your network. And I would like to kind of get some feedback from folks, too. I know many of you have been involved in fundraising, both for Habitat, but also for other causes as well. And so, you know, the primary focus when people are initially looking at who to solicit for funds and for donations is really to kind of look at their closest circle of friends and family and acquaintances and look at those folks as kind of your first point of contact in looking for support. And oftentimes, you know, many of those folks are going to give because of you and because of the passion that you share about why you want to be engaged in this work. And I know that oftentimes what we hear from volunteers who've fundraised is that they were so amazed by how many folks, you know, came together and supported them in their work. And so I was just kind of curious for those of you that have been engaged for a while, just maybe how you may have addressed sort of that fear of asking friends and family for support. And so I'm going to kind of open it up to see if anybody would like to share. And then we're also going to hear from Norm Clearfield is our guest speaker tonight. And Norm is going to talk some about how he's been successful in fundraising not only through Habitat, but in working with lots of different nonprofits and his church as well. But I first wanted to just get a sense from those of you that are on the phone, just kind of how you felt in fundraising and maybe how you've overcome that fear some in asking people for support. And again, star 6 will unmute your line if you're muted. I think someone just unmuted their line. Anybody want to share?
Sure, I'd be happy to jump in.
Okay. Who is speaking right now?
It's Anna Madeo.
Okay.
And to be quite frank, I don't think that I've actually overcome the fear of fundraising. So when I did my previous trip, my choice was to do a raffle. And once people kind of found out the reason why I was doing it, that's when I was surprised to see how much people were really willing to put in for my cause and for this cause in general. But that seemed to really, that was the biggest one, the one that worked the best for me.
Great. And actually, that's a great example. I think oftentimes the events or having kind of a plan like a raffle or an auction are ways to be able to get folks to support you, but it's not maybe as direct of an ask as, you know, sending out an appeal letter or you know, asking someone in person for the support. Anybody else want to share a little bit? Well, let me kind of review a little bit about just kind of the assessing your network and kind of looking at sort of the way we would sort of break down donors and also it kind of ties into sort of how you set your goal and how much you would ask, you know, certain people or even organizations to provide sponsorship. So there's really about 4 different categories that we see overall and kind of approaching fundraising. And the first category is really the high donors and family foundations. And we do find that we have some volunteers that are able to receive support this way. I know we had a woman who went on a few teams to Haiti this year that was supported through a family foundation. And typically those high donors for trip-based fundraising is around a $1,000 donation. And I would say, you know, that there's probably a handful of folks or, you know, a smaller number of volunteers that are really able to kind of tap into the high donors or family foundations. And then really the next category is looking at corporate, church, civic organization support. And we know that this is an area where our volunteers have been very successful in both reaching out to their church for support, for their company, looking at sort of the matching gift programs, and also looking at the donors that contribute to them looking to see if their company also matches. We've had great success in leveraging matching gifts for volunteers. And then we've also had some volunteers that have been subsidized by Rotary Clubs or Lions Club. So some of it is just really, you know, partly assessing the network and the organizations that people are connected to. And then the churches have been great sponsors for many of our volunteers. And then I would say the primary way that the majority of our volunteers are raising funds is through smaller donors. So small donations, $10, $25, $100 donations in support of the volunteer and their efforts. And then really the last category is one that we discussed last week, which is really talking about a donor bridge. And that's basically someone who knows someone that would be interested in supporting the work of the volunteer on the trip, because either they're supportive of Habitat or you know, they're interested in supporting, you know, possibly, you know, we see a lot of sponsorship for some of our college students and being able to join these trips. So there's definitely different levels of donors, and really how much we ask is directly to connected to who, you know, who is in our network. And so I'm going to actually give an opportunity now for Norm to share a little bit about kind of how he goes about creating his fundraising plan, and then, you know, looking at his network and deciding kind of what steps. And in some cases, you know, when you're assessing your network, you're looking at, you know, how you may ask these volunteers, these donors to support you in your work. And then in some cases, you may also, as you're setting your plan in place, think about the different opportunities of doing event-based fundraising or other ways that you can engage people in providing gifts in kind or services that can be either raffled off or auctioned. And I know Norm's done kind of a variety of things in a really kind of a multi-layered approach in how he's gone about his fundraising for his GV trip. So I'm going to let Norm take over and share a little bit about his successes and what's worked for him in assessing his network and asking folks for support. So, Norm, are you ready?
I am, Rose. Thanks very
Great.
Much. Sounds like you can hear me okay.
Yep.
Great. Well, hello, everybody. Just a tiny little bit of background. As Rose said, my name is Norm Clearfield, and I work in the Global Village program that's based in Americus, Georgia, and I work specifically with the Thrivent Builds Worldwide program. And I have led five Habitat trips, and I guess the first thing that I want to tell people is just to really encourage you that in my experience, everybody can fundraise. And I know that people have a fear, particularly in not just our culture, of asking people for things or asking people for money, but really in the context of a Global Village trip, I really want to just sort of encourage you that in my experience, there's really no need to be afraid, because when you tell most people that you're raising money to support a Habitat or Thrivent Global Village mission trip to some country, most people will usually be very encouraging and very supportive, and almost nobody will be offended by what you're asking. So I just really want to put that out there and encourage you to just, you know, try to just, you know, if find a way to ask. To kind of build on something that Rose said too, one of the things that I always try to challenge myself to do as well is to make sure that in the context of asking not only for money, that I'm asking people for other things as well. And the one thing that I, whenever I do fundraising, and I do a lot of just personal fundraising by email, which probably gives you a little bit of a clue as to my age, but I'm just, you know, beginning to get into the social networking stuff as well, is that I always ask people to just support our trip through prayer or just by, you know, holding us up and in their thoughts and prayers. So I'll say a little bit about kind of how I build my own network. I've been doing this for quite a long time. So I've had a lot of practice thinking about and building networks of people that can help me, but I just sort of penciled down just off the top of my head a few of my networks of people. So my networks of people include people that I went to high school with, people that I went to college with. I'm one of these people who does go to reunions. So when I go to reunions, and people ask me what I do or what I've been doing, I always talk about the work that I do with Habitat or the trips that I've led with Habitat. And most people are, you know, it's a great way to have conversations with people. I play basketball and tennis. So there's a bunch of people that I play sports with on a regular basis. There's my church community, the people I work with, the people I socialize with. My wife and son are both professional musicians, and so through them I've met whole networks of musicians. So those are just kind of some of the things. And I guess as somebody who's sort of always thinking about fundraising, I'm always trying to just sort of intentionally build my network of people that I know. And when I meet people, I always try to get, you know, some type of contact information for them. And, you know, if I talked about Habitat, then sometimes I'll just send them an email the next day and say, you know, it was really great to meet you at that dinner last night. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk about Habitat, and just to establish that contact, not even asking for them anything specifically, but just sort of building the relationship. So as Rose said, you know, there are lots of ways to do indirect fundraising as opposed to just, you know, asking somebody directly either in person or by email or some other form of contact. So I also wrote down some of the things that I do. Now, as I mentioned, both my wife and son are professional musicians, so I know all kinds of networks of musicians. So one of the things that I do very often is I'll do fundraising concerts. And they can take a variety of forms. Sometimes it'll be a free concert where we'll just kind of pass the hat. Or we might charge a small admission and then, you know, just talk about the work we do and, you know, invite people to give more. Some of the other things, if you know people, if you like to cook or you know people who like to cook or you know somebody who owns a restaurant or is in the restaurant business, you know, dinners, food as fundraisers are also great fundraisers. I've had a bunch of people on my teams before that have had some success asking local merchants that they patronize very frequently. We mentioned things like raffles, silent auctions, scavenger hunts. So there's, you know, there's no limit to the kinds of fundraising ideas that you can have. And some people, while they might not be able to give you money or they might not feel comfortable giving money, you know, maybe they like to cook or maybe they like to play a musical instrument. So I really challenge you to kind of, you know, just think, who do you know and how can they help? So I'm going to stop for a minute and see if people have any questions or Rose, if you wanted to kind of make any additional comments. Quiet group tonight, huh?
Norm, I think it might be helpful just to share a little bit about, you know, what you've done in just sort of the different ways of, you know, I know that you do a lot with the email and doing some follow-up, but also if you've shared any kind of in-person ask that you've made as well. Because it really is, at a certain level, the in-person ask is the best approach, especially if you're asking for a larger gift. So I'm wondering if you have kind of an example to share with
you. Well, I'm going to just say, you know, I actually, almost all of the fundraising I do is donations of $100 or less. And so although I do know some people that give more, just kind of through networks of people that I built. Also, another good network of people is if you have been on Habitat or Thrivent trips before, people that you've been on trips before are great supporters. Some of my most consistent supporters over the years have been people I have done previous Global Village or Thrivent trips with. So keep that in mind as well. For me, Over the years, I've developed just a very effective system of fundraising directly by through email. And the one thing that I will say in my experience is that I kind of have what I call cycles of asking. So I usually try to start doing fundraising about depending on how much lead time I have, anywhere from 3 to 6 months out. And I will do multiple asks because you should not be afraid to ask people more than once. Particularly an email is a pretty indirect kind of an ask in some ways. Most people are not going to be offended if you ask more than once. And actually, my experience has been that there's sort of a whole cycle. So let's say I'll give you an example of a trip where I had a $5,000 goal. And actually, I did about 5 different asks over a period of about 2.5 months, and about every time I raised about $1,000. And so, some people jumped on the bandwagon right away, and then maybe 2 weeks later, I sent an email out and said, thanks to everybody that supported me. I've raised $1,000 of my $5,000 goal. Here's some more information about the country we're going to visit. Here's an update on how some of my other teammates are doing in terms of raising money. So I kind of keep a dialogue going over a period of about, 3 to 6 months, and just continuing to just ask people to continue to think about our trip. If they're able to make a donation, to make a donation. And every time I send out an appeal, I get more money. So the other thing I would say is don't just ask once and then figure because people said no or didn't respond that they're not interested. Think about yourself if you get an email or somebody asks you to do something. If it's, for most people, giving to your trip may or may not be a very high priority. So it's not that they don't care, but really they need to be reminded sometimes several times. They're like, oh, yeah, I keep meaning to send Norm a check. So, I'd really encourage you to be persistent. And I like I said, most people, if they're connected to you in some way, are not going to be offended by your asking or not going to be offended by your asking more than once.
Norm, I think you brought up a good point, too, in the importance of, one, follow-up, but also follow-up and sharing more information. So one of the things that we would encourage everybody to do is to reach out to the coordinators and the specialists that you're working with to ask for more information about the project. Oftentimes we are getting additional family profiles or updates about the project, and I think it's really important to keep the donors informed of the project and what the need is, because it helps them understand, why it's important for you to go and work in Guatemala for a week and build alongside family. So it's very important to be able to share more about the project. And we're doing our best to work with the host programs to get some good updated resources to share. So that's an important piece. Norm, I'm curious, too, have you done the online fundraising? And have you found that a lot of folks have contributed via credit card?
Yeah, so I don't have a whole lot of experience yet, Rose, using the new share.habitat site, but, I've used the traditional Habitat, just, email link and set up, and many of my teammates as well have used that setup to, just when I email, I just send the link, and most of the donations that I get are online by people clicking on some type of link and then making an online donation. So, for me, that's proved to be a very, very effective and easy way for people to get connected. And also, you can use that as a way to just kind of get information out about your trip. You can just send a link and not even necessarily directly ask for money. Just send out an email to, all your family and friends and contacts and just say, hey, I'm going to be going to Mongolia in July of this year, and here's some information about my trip. And, buried in that information is, there's a little donate button if they want to donate to your trip. But my first email is just going to be to say, hey, just want to let thanks a lot for your past support. And here's some information about the trip that I'm going to be leading to Mongolia in July, and not even ask for money. And if you have enough time to do that, you can sort of build the knowledge and the base to leading up to an ask.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, a couple of things that we've noticed, and it's really probably as we started the online fundraising web pages, and then have now shifted to share.habitat, we have found that they've been extremely effective. And right now, probably for Global Village, 90% of our payments that come through online. We also see some larger gifts, which we've been able to sort of measure over the past couple years. The other thing too is that, you know, there's a lot of folks that still are not necessarily into email and into social networks. And so one of our most successful fundraising team leaders is a leader who does a letter writing campaign. Her name's Jessie Strauss, and she's you know, found a very effective way to send an appeal letter, share information about the project that she's going to, and includes a self-addressed stamped envelope and sends that out to her supporters. And she also challenges, you know, her team members to do the same, and has shared kind of her sample letter with folks. And that's been a very effective way for Jessie to raise ongoing support. And she's a leader that goes out on multiple trips a year as well. So
and
that's
another appeal.
Go ahead, Norm.
Yeah, I'd like to second what you said, Rose. Actually, I would say, I have to say, I've gotten away from that over the years as I've gotten more into just using the internet to do my correspondence. But I would say that in the past, some of the absolute most effective fundraising I've ever done has been personal letters. And not only just to send somebody a letter, but just to take a minute. And what I usually do is just like write one or two sentences on the very top, just a quick, very quick handwritten note. And, you know, especially anymore, you know, people very rarely get friendly type letters in the mail anymore. And, you know, if you can make it a little personal and maybe hand addressed the label, it's that can be really, really effective.
I think, was somebody going to comment? I thought I heard
something. Well, I have a question. This is Valerie Plasky.
Sure.
When you're, Norm, when you're raising money for your trip, and, okay, I'll use my trip as an example to China. We're going in July, and it's costing each participant $1,150. 600 of that is the donation to Habitat and to Habitat China. So when you're asking people to donate to your trip, are you asking them to support only the donation portion that goes directly to the Habitat affiliates, or are you asking them to support your personal expenses as well? I guess that's where I struggle, is the over the perception, people thinking that I'm asking them to pay for my trip.
Yeah.
Do you know
no,
what I'm saying?
That's a really good question. I'll tell you, I tend to be intentionally a little bit vague about that in the correspondence that I do, but if people ask me directly, I will say, like, say in the case of your trip, that let's say 50%, you know, that 50% of the money is going to go directly to support the work of Habitat China, and you know the other is going to support you. I mean, the other thing, that there's a lot of different ways you could frame it. Maybe you're willing to kick in, let's say, $500 or $550 yourself. And you can truthfully say that, you know, all of the money that I raise through this solicitation is going to go directly to Habitat China.
Right.
I think one of the things, too, that we've noticed is that there's a lot of people that are willing to support sponsoring somebody to go, because they might not ever be interested in doing it, but they think it's great that this person wants to have this unique experience, and they're willing to give their vacation, their time, and some of their resources to make it happen. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of folks that are willing to support folks, not just knowing that, you know, this much money is going to the donation, but just the fact that someone is willing to give of their time and their talents to go and travel and work alongside families.
I think that's very true, and I wanted to add something to that as well, Rose. I'd say two things. One is that if you have people that may be tentative about joining your trip because of financial reasons or financial barriers, I would really try to encourage them to think about the idea that they really can fundraise for your trip. And beyond that, I mean, I've had people that really, really couldn't by themselves. There's no way by themselves that they could afford to do a trip like this. And I mean, in some cases, it was very well known that they were not able to. And those people were able even to do fundraisers where, you know, people would give them money, just like cash donations or things to, or write them a personal check to help pay for their airfare. So people really do, I mean, most people are just like, I'll use my Ethiopia trip as an example. They're never going to be able to even think about going to Ethiopia, but they would love to support somebody who is really genuinely passionate about wanting to do that. You know, remember too that what you're donating, you know, a week or two more or more weeks of your own time to do this. And people really recognize that as something that you're bringing of real value. So it's not only about the, you know, the money, it's about the time that you're donating as well. And not only the time that you're donating to go, but the time that you're donating in terms of, you know, especially if you're a team leader, you put in a lot of work in terms of, you know, putting trips together. So, you know, people will recognize that.
Right.
We've also go ahead.
One of the things that my teammates are struggling with is the airfare is just really outrageous right now to China.
Yeah.
And they may be able to the cost of the trip, but now the airfare is a huge barrier. And I'm afraid people are going to drop out because they can't afford the $1,800 or $2,400 to pay for the airline ticket.
I don't know if you know if you're able to challenge some people to just, you know, the challenge is, you know, some people are looking for the tax deductible donation, but you can do things like raffles or have concerts or have a dinner where you raise money where people will give you a check or a cash that's not, you know, it's not to Habitat. Really, I've had lots and lots of people that, you know, have raised thousands of dollars just by doing little fundraisers like that. You know, you can do a dinner where you charge $25 or $30 and people can write you a check or pay in cash. And really, you can raise a significant amount of money to help offset the cost of the airfare.
Thank you.
And I really try to encourage people, if money is the only barrier, I really try to encourage them to, you know, to think about the think about the idea that they could actually raise the money.
Yep.
I know that several of you are from closed registration teams, so churches and schools. And I know, Holly, when you came on the line, you shared a little bit about your recent success with an event that you hosted at your church to raise funds as a team. I'm wondering, Holly, if you'd want to share a little bit about that.
Sure. For those of you that I didn't say who I was, my name is Holly Dellinger, and I'm from Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Jacksonville, Florida, and we did a fundraiser last October. It was a day-long event, and we had in the morning, we had a garage sale where all of the church members brought just their things that they were going to throw away. And then we had a lunch. We had a Bavarian food lunch. We had some baked goods for sale. And we had several bands that played while we were serving food. And we also had a silent auction. And between all of those events, we raised around $4,000.
That's great.
Share a little bit about what you did with your silent auction, because I think that was really creative, actually.
Well, for the silent auction, what I did is, this will be our fourth trip. So a lot of the people on my trip have been going year after year. So for each participant, I asked them to donate two items for the silent auction. And, you know, I really left it open. I had no dollar amount requirement or anything. And we had lots of people that had donations from restaurants. We had some people that donated paintings. We had somebody that donated two tickets to Wicked. Somebody donated Jaguar football tickets. We had several food baskets that were made. And some people donated their time. We had a carpenter donate his time and an architect donate his time. We had a plumber donate his time. So we had a lot of different things.
Yeah, I think it was great how you reached out and had the team kind of help to kind of solicit the different gifts. And the donating of the time and all of that, I mean, I think, you know, last call we talked a little bit, I think another couple from a church shared about how they had, you know, donated classes where people would pay and would have a teacher that would do a craft or scrapbooking. Or we just recently had an email that came through to us from a woman who's raising money for her Vietnam trip, and she has a yoga instructor that has donated a class and that they're advertising to help support her trip. So I think there's a lot of ways to kind of look at a broader network and how people can be engaged. And then some of the really effective ways that individuals have fundraised through letter writing campaigns too have been related to either sponsorship tied to kind of an event. So we've had some colleagues and other Habitat volunteers that have done marathons or half marathons or 5Ks and asked for sponsorship that would be tied into raising funds for their trip. And that's been an effective way. We've also had examples of, you know, birthdays and graduations and other, you know, big events that in someone's life that they use to kind of look at being able to request gifts in lieu of request donations in lieu of gifts. So I think there's a lot of creative ways. Another appeal message is about kind of sponsoring me in my, you know, days of work in Guatemala, and it's, you know, $100 an hour, or, you know, sponsor me for half a day. So there's a lot of creative ways to kind of put the message out there as well. And that's one of the things that we'll be talking about next week is sort of the importance of crafting a really good appeal and looking at sort of the different kinds of appeal letters or emails that that volunteers can use in asking for support. Just wondering if there's any other folks that want to share any creative ideas that have been effective for you in fundraising.
Rose and Norm, this is John Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to tell the group that one of the ways that we here in our affiliate work well with fundraising, actually two ways. And one was touched on where you first educate the people where you're going, the local affiliate, so they know exactly what kind of homes you're going to build, the people you're going to be working for, et cetera. And then real effectively is to, before your trip, call or email the volunteer specialist and get a breakdown of the home materials in which you're going to be working. For example, let's say shutters are $400. So you go to your local construction place and say, if you donate to me $400, you will pay for the shutters on the home. Or you, $150 gets the seamless gutters. Or $350 gets the bathroom fixtures, et cetera, et cetera. So when you go to a company or you go to an individual for that matter, you have in hand the list of the house expenditures right down to the T and on a spreadsheet, and they know how much they can afford and how much they want to give, and they know that home in South Carolina will have the shutters or the walkway or the landscaping or whatever they donated, and they can put up in their store or area we donated to Habitat for Humanity, John's Island, and we bought the windows. So mm-hmm. they're proud of the fact that not only did they donate money and funds, but they know exactly where their money came or went to, and also the person. And during the trip, once the person's on the site, now with camera phones and the like, they can send pictures back to the donor while they're on site, lifting up the truss or putting in the window, and keep in constant contact. You know as well as I do that we're in a society where in an instant we can get back. So maybe the monies have already gotten to you for that trip, but if they see a person actually working and putting in the windows that they donated, then for sure they will be a return donor. And it's worked very effectively here in our local affiliate when a person or the company knows exactly what they're buying. And then also, and Norm touched upon it earlier, that so many folks do not know that their donation is tax deductible. And now we as non-accountants, we don't know all the tax laws, but maybe we should be, as leaders, educated more in what tax deductibles mean to a certain individual or group or that way. And so, but we still should remind them that it is tax deductible. So I found personally that to remind our members or applicants to go on trips that they can indeed take it off their taxes, and you know, most of them don't know that. And so again, educating the people is certainly an important issue that has to be addressed. But I think if you can get the material cost, you can go online with Habitat. But if you went to the individual, no matter what country it's in, if you knew how many bricks could be bought for $400, people want to know that.
That's a great point, John. I think we that's one of the things that we've asked actually for the countries as part of you know what we're doing with the online fundraising, but just in general to be able to provide some good resources for volunteers so that they can see, okay, well, in this country it's $2,000 and, you know, $150 will buy, you know, the two windows or will buy the door or, you know, however X number of dollars will buy, you know, a certain lot of bricks or something. So that is an important thing that we're working with the host to receive more details on, because I think it does make it much more tangible, you know, in people seeing that level of support. I also think you made a really great point about the importance of thank you and having that thank you photo coming from the build site. And we have, you know, team members that have actually, you know, created thank you signs and hold it up in front of the house they're working on and send postcards back, or, you know, have a postcard that they send when they get back. So that thank you goes a long way, especially in cultivating kind of long-term donors for your teams and for yourself as well. I think someone else is going to make a comment.
Rose, this is Norm. The other thing I was going to say in listening to John talk, too, is you know, share your story after you get back so that people really have something to connect to. You know, share your pictures or do a little presentation, because that's one of the things that I really try to do, particularly in the church communities that I work with, is to really have a time, like, you know, maybe you have a coffee hour or something, or even as part of maybe a Sunday school class, where you just really sit down with people and share your story. That's really important, and it really helps people be connected to the work that you do.
That's so true, Norm, especially in your civic organizations like Rotary or Lions or Kiwanis. They love to have you at their Tuesday lunch meeting. When they donate money and you go and just give a 15, 20-minute presentation, yep, on where you've been, you know, who you are. They love to have their picture in the paper, and it serves two purposes. And I think, too, if you relate to your team members that the Rotary, for example, they are so willing to give monies, maybe not a lot, maybe, but just a little bit, and in turn they get some publicity, and that's what they're there for. That's why they're civic organizations, and what would it cost a team member to go on a Tuesday at noon hour for an hour and a half and get lunch? And I know a lot of people are not comfortable, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you become. I don't have a trouble with talking in front of people because I taught school for 35 years. But once you've done it and see the responses of people who are, wow, that, you know, you really did that, and that's where our monies went. And then 2 days later, you see it in the paper. It's really a nice feeling for them, too. So you're correct. And if you could just go to that coffee hour or that meeting, it's really important.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Any other thoughts that folks want to share with us this evening about effective fundraising that they've done, or questions or concerns you may have? Well, we really appreciate you joining us for the call, but also just the leadership that you're bringing to, you know, facilitate an experience for the volunteers to be able to work alongside our partners in country means so much to the families that we serve, as well as to the leadership in those communities. It's very affirming for them to have volunteers coming from the U.S. and other countries to be part of their work. It makes them feel supported and a part of this bigger, broader mission that Habitat is in transforming lives. And so in your leadership that you're providing to your team, you're, you know, opening up people's eyes to the organization, and even those of you from affiliates are exposing your volunteers to just being part of this, you know, bigger Habitat family, and being connected with our partners in the field. So we're very grateful for the time that you're putting into leading, and we're grateful for the support that you're working to give your team members around the fundraising. And we are, you know, continuing to improve resources, and, you know, this is just a start for us with this fundraising call series, and we hope to continue to improve it and to build upon it. Next week we'll have a guest that will talk about her appeal letter and what she did in raising funds for Nepal. And then in 2 weeks we'll talk about event-based fundraising in more detail, and we'll have a leader who is engaged in their team raised close to $30,000 for our project in Nicaragua last year. And then our final session in the call series is going to be about thanking your supporters. And we're hoping to have a team leader who's been engaged in fundraising just about on every trip that he's done, and has a real broad network of supporters that he goes back to on an annual basis to support him in his effort. So we look forward to having some of you join us. Please encourage your team members to join us as well. And like I said, we will be working to post these recordings as well as the updated fundraising guide as soon as it is ready. So I myself and Norm and can stay on the line if folks have questions. But thank you again for what you do for Habitat and for joining us this evening.